All right, welcome to History Through Art Week 9, everybody, for the junior and senior high class in this History at Our House program of American History. We're going to do facts practice before we look at our new painting. So if you are in the recordings, I encourage you to join us in this exercise. We're doing facts practice 1A again. Next week, we are going to do facts practice 1B. And I will be then distributing 1C and 1D, and you will see a number of different exercises to encourage your memorization and thinking about this particular content. So anyway, let's do the, it's 3 minutes, right, that we are dedicating to this exercise. Let me know if it's not three. I think it's 3 minutes, but hopefully I remembered that correctly. So I'm not going to record it, but we'll come back to this after the students have completed it. So I'm going to pause the recording and we'll be back in a few minutes. All right, so we're back after our 3 minute facts practice. Let me remind you and state it once again, next week is going to be facts practice 1B. So we're going to mix it up. The facts are the same and the format is the same, but the order of the facts has changed. And actually, next week we're going to do something else other than I announced yesterday. We're going to work our way towards being capable of narrating the anchor facts as a story. And the way that we're going to do that is we're going to focus on interconnection. We're going to focus on how the facts not only connect to the present, but how the facts connect to each other. So what we're going to do is we're going to pick one reference fact. We'll take, let's say, we'll start with the first one, Men is Narmer. And then we're going to try to draw a connection from that fact to each and every one of the other ones. Then we'll pick another fact, the Fall of Rome. And we're going to try to draw a linkage, a relationship between that and each of the other facts, one at a time, in order to encourage ourselves to think about the facts in that way, as an interconnection of knowledge. And that, I think, will put us in a better position. See, when you write, especially when you want to write a story, you have to have done a significant amount of thinking before you write. And what you will always find in your writing, and you may have experienced this at times before, is if you don't know what you're going to write, you can't write. If you don't already know what it is you're going to write about, if you don't have knowledge, if you don't have an understanding of the thing that you're trying to write, you can't write. You ask your subconscious, basically, your brain, to produce information on a topic, and it won't do it because there isn't any. So it's writing is a very special activity that helps us to finalize, I find, to finalize our knowledge and our awareness of something. But what you have to do before that is a lot of thinking. And so what I'm going to be encouraging you guys to do over the next couple weeks, I think, rather than leap right into the writing exercise, which you probably find pretty difficult and frustrating if I asked you to do it right away, what we're going to do is we're going to do some interconnection work. And when you are comfortable with the degree of interconnectivity between the facts, that will put you in a strong position to write the narrative. All right, so anyway, next week, facts practice 1B. Now I'm just going to stage this art lecture here. Okay, I'm ready to go. So I'm going to share my screen with you now, and I'm going to invite your first impressions. So here we go. Share my desktop. All right, so Ashton's first impression is to immediately attempt to decipher what this event is. That's just fine. Okay. It's not what you think it is, Ashton, but that's okay. So anyway, what about the rest of you guys? What is your immediate response to the image? So, Timothy, go ahead.
I like the use of colors.
Okay. It is an interesting painting in that regard. I find the palette to be kind of subdued overall. So it's an interesting comparison with other paintings we've looked at. And the lighting is a little on the grayish side. And so it allows the artist to kind of manipulate colors a bit. With the reds and the yellows are interesting and the greens. Yeah, I agree. I think it's an interesting painting in terms of the use of color. Okay, Alexander, what about you?
First impression was silver, lots of silver.
Well, you mean, silver. Yeah, the metallic
silver.
Sheen.
Sort of silver.
Yeah, the metallic sheen of the armor, right? And of the weapons,
yeah.
Is that it? Yeah. Yeah, it is interesting, because there's a textural feature to this image, I agree, as well. From a sensual perspective, and art is sensual, right? In other words, involving the senses. From a sensual perspective, there are interesting textures and visual effects to delight the eye in this painting in a number of different regards. And so color manipulation, textural things like the metallic effects are very interesting. So yeah, I agree with that as well. Did you have more on that, Alexander?
The second thing I noticed was that in the background, there are some practically naked people who don't seem to be very happy about whatever is going on.
Okay.
There's some nice greenery over there.
Okay, there are some naked people off to the side. All right, and there is some nice greenery. Okay, so, all right, anything else? Like, dislike, indifference... Sophie, where do you stand?
I'm not sure. I feel like a little bit indifferent.
Indifferent. Okay, so the artist has not managed to generate an image that intrigues you. That's interesting to me. Okay, fair enough. So everybody has their own tastes. Is that the case for you as well, Erica? Are you there, Erica?
Oh, sorry, what?
Okay. I was asking you about your first impression.
Well, actually, the dude in red seems very triumphant. Those are the people behind him. But the rest of the people in the painting seem kind of sad and defeated.
Okay, so there are characters. So you're that's an interesting take. So you are kind of... Your perspective is that you are drawn to the characterizations. So that's an interesting thing, right? Like I said about art, everybody has different reactions. And it's interesting to observe that about ourselves. And so if that indeed is your first reaction, then it's an interesting thing to notice about you as a person, that you have a tendency to want to look at the people in what they represent, and you have an interpretive gaze. You are somebody that looks at people in a certain way. So that's kind of part of this first impression exercise, which I think you guys are not yet necessarily adept or haven't quite embraced yet, is this idea that your first impression tells you about you. So don't shy away from a first impression. Even if you think, oh, Mr. Powell's not going to like my first, who cares if I like your first impression? That's not what we're here to figure, I'm not here to criticize your first impression. The most important thing is that art can be a journey of self-discovery. And so interrogate yourself here. Find out about you. By using art. Art can be a mirror. So it's so fascinating to hear different minds interact, and you describing how your mind reacts to something is a piece of evidence for you, so that you are not a stranger to yourself. You don't just experience things and you kind of have this flux of emotions in your life and they flow over you and you don't control them, and you don't, you're kind of just this source of all kinds of reactions, and you don't know what they are and how to identify them and manage them and so on. Right? This is an opportunity. Even if the reaction is negative, that has positive, negative, and even if the reaction is indifference, that too is of value. That can say a lot of different things. An indifferent reaction means, well, let me ask you what you think it means. If you react with indifference to something, what does that mean, literally? Keen, I'm going to get to you in a second here, but I want to ask this question. Put your hand down for a second. I want to see if anybody can take this on. What is indifference? It's a very interesting psychological clue. Keen, what is indifference?
I would say that it reflects the fact that none of your values, like your values are neither, the whatever you're looking at, in this case, a painting, it's not triggering either. It's not like stimulating either your positive values. You don't feel your values, neither your positive values or values that you. I can't put this properly.
Yeah, you're doing really, really well. I'll help you. I'll give you the word that you're looking for here. What you're saying is that the it does not trigger a value significance.
Right,
whether it's positive or negative, as you're trying to say, because there's no such thing as a negative value. But what you're saying is, it's a negative with respect to your values, right? So that's a value significance. It means that it's removing from your experience of values. It's taking away values. It's negative. So, right, but if you're indifferent, what you're saying is, it makes no difference with regard to your values. That's indifference, literally. So that's okay. I mean, it could be the case. I mean, when I look at history paintings, I cannot have indifference because I'm a professional historian. And so to me, history is an ocean of values. And so no matter what painting I look at, I immediately have value associations, right? So that's different. You don't have to have any, but it can be a revealing experience to you to think about it and say, well, I'm a certain person, or I have things that are more important to me than this. That's absolutely fine, right? That's a clue about who you are and where you're at in your life. That's significant. Now, hopefully also, though, if you do feel indifference, part of my goal as a history teacher is to help you obtain this sense of value significance with regard to history. That is my goal, yeah, more than any other. Is to try to help you as a person come across this spectrum of things that human beings have done and feel that they matter to you. That's my goal. It's not easy to do, and it's all right not to feel that great significance at this stage in your life. But hopefully by the time you've had enough exposure to history, and history at our house in particular, I hope, you'll change. You'll be feeling it more. You'll start to be able to introspect a difference. And then you'll be able to look at a painting like this, and it will trigger a lot of emotions, as it does for me. So, anyway, fascinating stuff. And Keen, did you want to relate your first impression?
Yeah, sure. So, in fact, I was fairly indifferent to this painting. I regard it in a slightly positive fashion, but compared to a lot of the stuff that we've seen in the past and even just this year, all of those I've felt very positive about, and this one just, considerably less so. But I still like it. I noticed, I wasn't sure why I was feeling that way, and then I noticed that the lines are really, really sharp. And that, at first, I also was feeling like there was a lack of detail, but then when I actually look at it, there's not really a lack of detail. I mean, there is a lot of detail in this painting. So I felt like that maybe because the lines are so sharp, I feel like it's slightly unrealistic. I mean, if you look at the line of the ocean to the left, it's a perfectly straight line. It's over there.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you look at the mountains, it's, you know, the lines are, they're very clean. And so I'm not sure quite where I am with this painting, but those are just a couple things that I noticed.
That's so fascinating. All right, so yeah, that's an interesting remark, and that is a stylistic issue that I might, now that you've mentioned it, because I hadn't introspected that, I would tend to agree with you that I would take issue stylistically with a line like this that is that crisp as a horizon line. It's kind of unnatural. And I agree with you as well. I take issue with the way that some of this has been executed. That's very interesting. I hadn't thought of it. But I think that overall there is a lot of rewarding, perception to this here, that there may be some aspects where the artist has made some choices that we wouldn't agree with, but it's pretty, pretty hard to get to a painting where you don't have some issue perhaps with it. But all right, interesting comments, harsh lines, strange kind of, stylistic features that I agree with you as well. So yeah, he's a very interesting artist. Hopefully I'll bring you more across to the positive side by the time we're done here, because I think this painting is amazing. For a variety of reasons. Let's talk about the composition, the logical visual structure of the painting, and how it leads us to any particular character, set of characters, or to no character in particular. Did the artist achieve render this in a manner that creates a main character or not? So let's have a vote here for anybody that wants to say one main character and why. More than one main character and why, or no, there aren't any and why. All right, let's take that on now. All right, so let's start with one main character. Who thinks there's one and why? Sophie, please.
The light is kind of hitting him much more, the guy in the red, than everyone else. And also, his face is very, very light. And the light is also hitting his red, which kind of lights it up.
Yeah, okay. So in terms of lighting, we do have the high lighting of this character. I agree with you. So light, the use of light contributes to the character. One of the things that it does is it takes, and the use of color as well in combination with lighting, is it creates a very bright white patch right here, right? This is the strongest white patch in the entire painting, even though this is very bright over here. This light over, it's kind of like the rising sun or something over here, is very bright as well. This is the brightest patch in the foreground. Okay, so lighting is a feature that highlights one character. Ashton, what do you think?
I have to leave after this, but early. But I think that he is the guy in yellow. He's the bright orange, whatever you call it, and the bright white, like you were just explaining. He's pretty much obviously the white character also. I mean, the main character, sorry. Because he also has nobody behind him, sort of.
Okay. I mean, I see what you mean. In other words, his profile is not cluttered by other people's faces right next to his, like some of these other guys, let's say. I mean, actually, the fact is, in this grouping of characters, everybody is behind him. So he's in a leadership position. So that is actually a reason why he's a main character. So that's important to name. Yeah, and I would say that it is pretty obvious, Ashton, but part of our exercise in art appreciation is taking the obvious and rendering it explicit and getting in the habit of naming things which do tend to just jump out at us and we experience them, but being able to name what we are experiencing is useful in terms of being more thoughtful and being more communicative about our experiences. So that's kind of what we're up to here, is we're trying to take the obvious and make it explicit. So what other compositional tools do you think are being used here, Alexander?
Well, I think that the guy's kind of the main character, but unlike everybody else who seems to be looking around, he's just sort of standing in this dramatic pose, holding up a flag, looking up into the sky. So he seems to be kind of in his own world, while everybody else in the painting is in real life and, like, looking at what's going on.
Okay. Yes, so dramatic pose, dramatic gesture and posture, combined with the color, combined with the light. Yeah, this is very, very true. Whereas, and very much in contrast to the other characters, who, as you say, Alexander, are kind of engaged in mundane or kind of unself-conscious type of action. Whereas his is dreamy, his is kind of this, like you said, he's in his own world. So that separates him in terms of characterizations. That's quite significant. Sophie, what about you?
This is the main character?
Yeah.
I'm not sure. This painting is very, I just love it. It's so intricate, but it's really hard to figure out what this character imbues, in my opinion.
Well, okay, but I'm not asking that. I'm not asking that, Sophie. Careful now. What I'm asking is, how did the artist make him the main character? Not so much, what does he represent? Yeah, that's going to be our analysis. But how did he establish, in our minds, in our perception of him, that he is the main character? That's what I'm asking. So, use of color, use of light, use of contrast, use of dramatic gesture and posture, use of characterization. Are there other things? He's in the foreground. I'm going to help you here. He's in the foreground. He's close to the center. Anything else?
He's in a very wide posture. He sort of takes up a lot of space in the painting.
I like that. Good. Well said. He takes up a lot of space. That's a good one. That is a visual cue, right? I like that. I don't think I've ever heard that said about a character before, but he takes up a lot of space. That's a good one. Okay. Keen, what about you?
All right. So I agree with everything. The only thing I feel like that hasn't been said, Ashen was trying to get at a little bit, but he's, well, you know, everyone is behind him, but he's slightly separated from everyone else. You know, there's a bit of a gap between him and the rest of the group, for sure.
Yeah, yeah, the other guys are cluttered, whereas there's a degree of separation between him and the others. I agree with that, too. Nicely put. Okay, so now, Sophie, we're going to go to the analysis. So, does anybody want to argue that we're wrong, that there isn't one main character? Did anybody want to take that and say, no, you guys are wrong, there are two main characters, or there are three, or more, or no, there aren't any, everybody's equal here. I don't think anybody would argue that in this case, right? But there might have been we could have an interesting discussion about the other characters. And just briefly, I want to do that. I want to encourage you in this regard to observe something again about art, which is non-obvious. And that is that in a scene involving multiple characters, depending on the degree of mastery of the visual artist, the artist has the option and the choice and capability to generate a visual hierarchy if he so chooses. And by that I mean that the artist can arrange the world as we see it in a manner that creates a kind of structured perception of the characters. He can take a main character and he can elevate him in visual and conceptual importance above the others in a certain way. And we've just been discussing that. But then he could also suggest to us or have us understand that there are other characters that deserve more attention than others. And direct our attention to them in some manner, by manipulating our perception. And so that can be so fascinating when an artist does that. And I do feel that he's done it. I do feel that he's done it. And so I'm going to say that, and see what you guys have to say about this. I'm going to say that the artist has created a visual hierarchy here. And the hierarchy consists you know, first of all, evidently, of the main character. But then it consists of a secondary group, which even within the group, see, this frame that I've erected here almost is a painting in itself, isn't it? Like, if I were to cut and paste this, that would be like a painting all by itself, wouldn't it? Right there. I mean, we could create a painting. I love this. I call these, I have my own term for this. I call these subcompositions. So when, you see, this is a painting right here, isn't it? If I were to take a photograph and just take that picture, that would be a painting right there. And so the main character is a painting. And then this other group here, that's a painting too. By itself. And so that creates a kind of a structure conceptually in the painting. And within that group, I would even suggest that the guys with the armor have a certain role to play. And then after that, there's a third rank. Whoops, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to move that. But there's a third rank of characters that's broken up into two subsets. Right? These ones and these ones. And they're balanced. Did you notice that? That the primary group is in the exact center of the painting, and that the other two groups are visually balanced in the image in a very interesting way. This group over here is kind of more in the shadows. This group over here is more lighted. They're obviously different and of opposite sides in a sense. So this image has a really interesting structure. So it's got interesting verticals, it's got interesting horizontal divisions, and use of color and light. I think it's fantastic, in that regard. So yeah, anyway, so that's more than some of you need to know. But anyway, let's look at our main character. And, this is a pretty darn good photograph too, so we can take advantage of that. So let's focus in on the face at first, because when you're trying to read a person, their visual expression and their eyes and everything tells you the most information about another person, right? So read this face. So if you put your hand down, it's been up for a while. I suspect it was just a mistake. But you can raise it again, of course, if you'd like to contribute to our characterization here. What do you see on the face of our main character? Okay, King, go ahead.
I think he's in his own world, like I think Alexander said. I think that's a great description. His eyes, they seem a little, I don't know, dreamy, and that upward gaze. He's not, I mean, if you try to think of something he's looking at, you know, something worldly, you can't really come up with anything. I mean, is there a massive tree above him or something?
Right, so there isn't.
The light might not be so full on him if there was some sort of massive object above him. So the only really conclusion to come to is that he's in his own world, looking up into the sky, or not looking at anything, more likely.
Right, indeed. So the upward gaze and the kind of introspective kind of quality of the gaze suggests also, you know, something in particular, because he could be in his own world looking off into the distance. He could be in his own world looking down to the ground. But the fact that he's in his own world looking upward is quite significant. And so what we need to do with that information, is we need to combine it with something else. And so just for the sake of facilitating things, I'll tell you what to combine it with. What we need to combine it with is the gestures. So tell me about the right arm and the left arm, and then take that and interconnect it, please. So what about the right hand? All right, Alexander?
His right hand is holding the sword sort of straight down, but a little bit tilted. And I don't think it's touching the ground. So he's holding his sword, but obviously not trying to kill anybody with it.
Yeah,
and
right.
He's just putting it near the ground, and he's putting it to his side a little bit away from him.
Yes, indeed.
Adds
so
the dramatic posture.
Yeah, right. It adds, doesn't it? So, yeah, that's a good observation that the gesture is a kind of sideways gesture, and as a result, it's more dramatic than if it were just pointing straight downwards. It adds to this quality. I'm gonna now, because that's exciting. Thank you for helping me to see that more clearly. So it adds to a strange quality here in this painting. I'm going to highlight this line, and I'm going to highlight the line created by the gaze. And then this one's not quite parallel to those, I find, but pretty close. Yeah, so pretty close. So there's an interesting kind of diagonal quality to this character, or not quite vertical quality. This leg on which he is standing is entirely vertical, but then his leg is shooting out in front of him. It's an interesting set of lines, and I think Keane was kind of cluing in on this earlier concerning the lines in this painting. They have an unusual quality, and some of them converge on this character. I mean, even this horizon line converges on him somewhat. And some of them break up that horizon, and some of them break up, and some of them are slightly vertical, and so on. So a lot of different, very interesting lines here. But they do, I think, almost all of them contribute in some regard to the way in which this character jumps out of the scene. And so this gesture of pointing the sword down to the ground while looking upward in the opposite direction, in effect, and then with the left hand, Again tilted. A tilt of the flagpole outwards and in. So why not just the flag straight up and down? Why is the flag slightly at an angle? Why the tilt? What does the tilt do? You never thought that you would actually have to think about that, right? But what does the tilt do? It actually does something quite important. So amazing how everything matters. You know, Alexander, you want to take that?
It's the flag down so that you can see the emblem on it, but sort of sideways instead of, well, if you hold the flagpole straight up, the flag would just be down on the pole unless it's pretty.
Yeah, there's not much of a breeze here. So he wanted to create a simple effect whereby the flag would unfurl a little bit and we would be able to see it at a diagonal and be able to see the emblems. And it would make sense, and it would take up a different amount of space than it would if it were straight up and down. And he needed to do that because he wants to create this effect of he's pointing down, and then he's pointing up, he's looking up, and the flag points up, and the flag unfurls. All of it must go together. This is, you know, this character represents something very specific here. So, if we combine that, by the way, does anybody recognize this? Timothy wants to make a guess. Go ahead, Timothy.
It's the old flag of England.
No, it's not, but good try. So, I'm going to remind you guys. Keen, do you remember it?
All right, is it France?
No, not France either. So, But actually, what I meant was we've seen it in another painting. We've seen it in another painting. And so we'll come back to that. I'm actually going to do a little bit of a presentation. I'm going to start having the other paintings and other paintings to use as a foil in our analysis sometimes handy. And so I'll bring this back. But yeah, it does matter very much, does it not, that the man is holding a flag that represents a certain country. And I'll tell you exactly what it is. It makes a lot of sense. And what this emblem is in particular. So anyway, all right, I'm gonna kind of polish this off here with a question. And then if I don't think you guys are getting it exactly, then I'm just going to try to boost you a bit. What is the upward gaze has a kind of introspective quality, but when we combine it with a gesture and we combine it with a flag, what is it? What is the sum of these gestural and postural issues, all of this? What does it add up to? What's the most sensible thing that it means? Anybody have a way of adding it all up? The pointing of the sword to the ground is very significant. I think that would be what it would hinge on. So think about that. Pointing of the sword to the ground, the gaze upward, and the unfurling of the flag. Try to turn it into a sentence. It might help. All right, I'll do it for you. I claim this land for you on behalf of X. Or I claim this land for X in the eyes of I hereby, right? In your name and on your behalf, as an agent of this power, claim this land. I mean, these guys have showed up with weapons, right? They're not here just for fun. They're all armed, and they have flags. And, well, this guy over here, right? He's got a gun, a musket, old style, of course. There's a lot of pikes. There's some swords. There's armor. A lot of different kinds of characters. This is actually a cross. And then there's a cross on the flag, along with other things, which you might actually be able to read and decipher. If not, we'll get back to it next time. All right, so we have, you know, a ceremonial gesture in the eyes of God. We have this moment where the man is communing, in effect, with God and saying, this is, I do this here before you. Very significant, very value-laden gesture for him. It's not nothing, right? Some of the other guys are just looking around. They don't seem to get it, or they don't seem to care. Not everybody's as invested in this moment. In fact, nobody's as invested in this moment as the main character. That's part of what makes him the main character, is this degree of investment in this event. He's enacting it, really, and it matters most to him. Not surprising. All right, so just to end off on an interesting note for today, I find that one of the most interesting characters that you could be if you wanted to do a history through art selfie, so Timothy, this will be a good challenge for you, is to be the character that you would most likely be in this painting if you were here, right? Who is the child? I thought that was such a fascinating a thing, that the artist included a child in the painting. I have no idea about the realism of it, but to me, it's such an interesting inclusion regardless. And does anybody have any thoughts about what the child is doing, and in particular, what role he plays in this image? I mean, just look at him and tell me what he's doing, first of all. Alexander?
He's on one knee and a little bit leaning forward, and his hands are on his chest.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay, he's got his left hand is up to his chest. Right hand seems to be holding his left arm. Okay, he's on one knee. And, well, here's the thing. Where is he looking? I always love it when it happens in a painting like this. Where's the child looking? Look at him there. That little corner over there. Where's he looking? Is he looking at an object? Timothy, go ahead.
I think he's looking at us.
I do too. Which is always an interesting thing when it happens in a history painting. What does that do when a character looks out at you from history? What does it do, Timothy? I mean, when somebody looks at you, what happens?
You feel a lot of connection.
Yeah, you know that they see you, right? You feel connected to them. They sense you. You are visible to them. And so it's not like you are some kind of ghost who is anonymously viewing some supposed occurrence in history, right? I mean, an artist is creating something. He's not a photographer. He's not taking a picture of something that happened. He's recreating it as an artist. But in that scene, in that moment, he inserts a character who apparently is able to see us. Isn't that kind of weird? Isn't it weird that a character would look at us out through this lens of history? And see us. He's looking over at us, kind of looking off to the side and saying, oh, I mean, he's not surprised, right? But how is he taking us in? What does this character think of us as he sees us? It's a weird experience. For me, mostly it just adds up to an awareness of us, a sense of connection to posterity, a sense of, are you looking at us? There's a connection between us. And I love that in history, and I always think that it's true, but it depends how strong the connection is. But if something's really important in history, then there will be a connection, right? And we have talked about anchor facts. And we have talked about the fact that these events in history shape our world. So he's looking out at us, in effect, with an awareness of the fact that what is happening now in his world connects to us. I think that's just ingenious. It's quite strange. I know you're there, he says. I see you. I'm looking at you. I know you're looking at us. Here we are. We're doing something important. You're going to know about us. Kind of weird. It's a psychological trick of some sort of psychological twist or device that's just really interesting to me. Because meanwhile, everybody else is just getting on with life, right? They are actors in some drama that's occurring in their lives. But meanwhile, this one character kind of gives us a sideways glance and says, I see you over there. It's like, oh yeah, cool. All right. All right, well, we've done a pretty good job with our main character, and now when we come back, we're gonna look at the main group, which occupies our central kind of zone within the painting, and then we'll look at the two sideways groups, the two peripheral groups, and a few other things, and of course, strive to integrate the entirety of it into one presentation. I look forward to it. It's a lot of fun so far. Thanks, everybody, for your contributions. And remember, next week is 1B, probably every day, if we have time for it. I think we will have time for it next week. Facts Practice 1B. So please practice it and have it ready. Have a good weekend. Bye for now, folks.
Bye.